You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about the 10 rules of successful real estate investing that he has successfully used for over 20 years.
He'll also be talking about turnkey rental properties, market analysis, and diversity across markets. Let's get going.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
How are you doing today, William?
I'm doing great, Charles. I hope you're having a great day. I'm sure you are.
I sure am. In Dominican Republic, man. So enjoying the weather and the food and drinks and everything that comes along with it.
I bet. I would be too.
Man, I'm super excited about our guest today, man. And he's a legend in the real estate world. Are you as excited as I am about our guest?
Very, very excited. Whether he thinks or not, we consider him a legend. So our audience probably will now too. But yeah, one of the things that I'm really interested in hearing, and I think you've shared the same thing kind of offline, kind of like a market update. I mean, people are asking me because I'm in real estate and I should know exactly what the market's doing at all, like all areas, but you can never have too much information, but sometimes putting it all together into an actual update is a lot harder to do than it sounds. So I'm really looking forward to potentially getting some of that.
Absolutely. And you know, the cool thing about all these podcast episodes that we're doing, like, you know, selfishly, like we get to like learn from so many cool people, like the guest we're having on today. And so if you don't know him, which I'm sure a lot of you already do, he's an investor, he's an author, and he's also the founder of Narada Real Estate Investments, a national real estate investment firm offering turnkey investments in the growth markets nationwide. He's the host of Passive Real Estate Investing Show, where they show busy people like you learn how to build substantial passive income while creating wealth for the long term. He's also the creator of Deal Grader, a scoring system that measures the investment quality of real estate investments, giving you an overall snapshot of his profitability and investment risks, right? Who wouldn't want to know that, William, right?
It would open up a lot of other deals pretty quick, I think, just helping you get through all of that, getting to it, analyze potentially a lot of different stuff a lot faster than you would putting in those numbers yourself manually. So yeah, that absolutely.
And you know he's truly a legend. Like, we're gonna call him a legend whether he like it or not.
For those of you that can't see this, he's over here shaking his head.
he purchased his first real estate investment at the age of 18 years old, and he successfully handled the entire rehab and property management of his first property without ever taking any course, any books, all those courses where they tell you run to the back of the room and give me $30,000. He didn't do that. He did from the age of 18 years old. And today, he is a licensed real estate broker in California and runs a successful firm, all focused on helping other investors build wealth through the power of real estate. So help me welcome to the show, Marco Santarelli.
It's an honor to be on your show. I love it. This is great. I appreciate the long introduction. Wow.
Man. So, you know, when I was putting it together, man, it was like no way we could shorten it. We were like, man, Marco has so much experience. And I think our audience is going to be excited to hear from you, man. But Marco, man, I seriously can't believe like we're interviewing you right now. Like, I remember when I got started investing before I even had any properties, I heard you talking on so many different platforms. And I was like, man, this guy's awesome. Like, I need to learn from him. Like, I need to know what he knows to help me get to that next level, man. So this is mind blowing, Marco. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be excited to hear you today. So tell us more, Marco, about your investing journey. What initially made you want to do it from your 18 years old?
Well, the short version of that, and thanks for asking, by the way, I knew at an early age, like when I was in my mid-teens, I wanted to be wealthy. I called it being rich at that time. And there's a difference between being rich and being wealthy. I thought I wanted to be rich, but really what I wanted to be is wealthy. So I took it upon myself before I even could drive a car to read what I could about business and entrepreneurship and real estate. And I consumed as much as I could to learn about investing in real estate, creative financing, you name it. Then from 16 to 18, I worked at a grocery store. I got paid really well. It was a good income. So I was able to save up enough of a down payment that when I turned 18 and I could actually qualify for financing, I was able to buy my first property. And it wasn't my home. It was a rental property. So I bought this townhome at the age of 18 that needed some work. So with the help of my uncle, we renovated the property. There was no internet back then. So for me to rent this sucker, I had to put a sign in the yard, flyer, and I don't even remember if I put a newspaper at it. I mean, yeah, a newspaper, right? But that's how I leased it. And so I cut my teeth just jumping in head first with a little bit of knowledge from reading. And, you know, the saying is the writing was on the wall. It was on the wall because that was my first property. And I just continued to go down this road of being interested in real estate and investing in real estate. I got my license. I started selling real estate. I wish I could go back and do more faster and in less time, knowing what I know today. I mean, that's certainly a lesson that anybody can take away is get started as early as you can and do as much as you can and learn as much as you can, because the more of that you do, the more it will compound on itself and the faster you will reach whatever your investment goals are. I call it financial independence or financial freedom. Back then, I just wanted to be rich. But you know, you can actually achieve a level of being rich by creating wealth. And that's the financial freedom part. So that's my journey.
Yeah. So what's your definition of rich versus wealthy? I'm just curious.
Well, if you're rich, it just means you have a lot of cash or a lot of assets. You're just sitting on a chunk of cash, right? And it may not do anything. It could be, you could lose it tomorrow. You could blow it on a slot machine. You could blow it on a bunch of vacations and Ferraris. And you're losing it anyway because of the effects of inflation. Like every year, inflation is eroding away 4 to 8% of it. So you're losing your purchasing power every single year. But if you have a lot of it, you have a chunk of it, you're on a mountain of cash, you're rich, right? If you have a lot of assets, you're rich. But what you may not have, if you have a lot of cash and a lot of assets, is cash flow. When you have the ability to generate passive income that supports your lifestyle, even if you have a wealthy, like champagne type lifestyle, now you have wealth. And I'm talking financial wealth, not personal wealth, physical wealth. There's different types of wealth. But to create wealth means that you have the means to survive, do what you want, when you want, live life on your own terms. You have the financial resources. And usually that comes down to assets that generate passive income to keep you free, financially free, and give you time freedom. So that's wealth. Being rich doesn't mean that you can survive indefinitely. Being wealthy means you can survive indefinitely.
I love that definition, man. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And so, Marco, what would you say is your first major breakthrough with investing, and how did it shape your path?
Within real estate investing?
Within real estate, yeah.
Wow. My first breakthrough, I'm not really sure what my first breakthrough is. There's probably more than one, but I think, man, you know, you can define breakthroughs in so many different ways. I think one of my biggest breakthroughs was not something I learned early. I learned late and a little too late because I made a lot of mistakes by not knowing what I know today. But one of my first big breakthroughs was understanding how critically important it is to choose the right neighborhoods when you're investing in real estate. We, you know, me and through my companies, and especially with my investment counselors at Norada Real Estate Investments, when we work with clients, when we work with investors investing in real estate, we take what I call a top-down approach. It's actually my sixth rule of my 10 rules of successful real estate investing. Taking a top-down approach means that you're taking a funnel approach. You start with the market and you invest, you choose markets based on the fundamentals. The fundamentals of that market typically come down to jobs and job growth and population growth. Those two things sustain and drive the real estate market. So those are critically important. So that's the top of that funnel. Then you work your way down to areas or regions within that metropolitan area. And then from there, you work your way down to the neighborhoods and then ultimately the property. So that's the top-down approach. A lot of investors make the mistake of getting focused on the deal. and the deals that property, sure, maybe it was fully renovated or it's new construction, but it's rooted in the area. You can't just take that beautiful property and uproot it and move it somewhere else if you don't like the neighborhood. So the lesson I learned is how critically important the neighborhood is. It literally mitigates 70, maybe even 80% of your risk by being in the right neighborhood. Even if you're not in the best of markets, and even if you don't have the best quality rental property. And the reason for that is because the type of tenant that you have, which is your customer, the type of tenant plays into the demographics of that tenant. And those come about because of the type of neighborhood. So if you want to be in a premium neighborhood, like an A-class neighborhood, where, you know, it's more expensive, but everything is very much white collar, higher incomes, you know, you've got Starbucks on every corner, you're going to have a certain type of demographic, you're probably going to have very few tenant problems. If you move into what I call the bread and butter neighborhoods, the B-class neighborhoods, you have growth potential, you have cash flow, you have good quality tenants, there'll be middle class, some upper middle class, it'll be very diversified, but you'll still have a good tenant pool and you'll be able to draw from a lot of great tenants. And you'll always have your property occupied because you're going to have, you know, desirability. People always want to live there. Plus you have, you know, a lot of sales comps, sales comparables, because you have a retail market in that neighborhood. So this is why I like B-class neighborhoods, B+, and A-. That's my sweet spot. If you go into C-class neighborhoods, now you're typically dealing with lower middle income and to some degree lower income demographics, more tenants, more tenant turnover. You know, it's just a different type of customer. And then, you know, your D-class neighborhoods are essentially war zones. You don't want to be in D-class neighborhoods. So, you know, long answer to your question, but, you know, my takeaway, what I wish I knew long ago, which I didn't learn until after I made a lot of mistakes and, you know, paid dearly for it, is to choose neighborhoods for your in real estate investing carefully, because it is so important to the success or failure or lack of success you're going to have in real estate investing.
Thank you for sharing that, man. And I heard you mentioning that that was one of the six rules of your 10 rules for investing. Well, would you care to share more about that, or even letting our audience know where they can find this? Because I think that your 10 rules, finding out, listening to 10 rules from a legend like you, those are going to keep calling you a legend, would be awesome. So can you dive a little bit more into your 10 rules?
Yeah, NORADA, NORADA, so noradarealestate.com. That's basically where you're going to find it. And it's at the top of the blog post, like you'll see it there. It's a perennial thing. It's always there. But yeah, I mean, I can go through all of them if you want, or just some of them. I mean, you tell me, you know, if you want to talk, how much of it you want to cover.
Let's hear all of them.
Sure. Okay. Let's go through them. So these essentially are my 10 rules of successful real estate investing. You know, to me, everything starts with education. It's critically important that you know and learn as much as you can. The thing is that, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And what we don't know is going to be costly or expensive for us. And even if it's not costing us, it's costing us in terms of opportunity, because you're going to miss out on opportunities. You won't be able to identify them. So there's a lot of truth in the saying, you know, the more you learn, the more you earn. And the more you know, the more you grow. So ignorance can be very expensive. And the more you educate yourself, the better of an investor you're going to be. Think of it like, you know, the new currency. That's, you know, what education is. So you don't want to be doomed following other people's advice, because you never know if it's good or bad. But the more you educate yourself, the better off you're going to be understanding whether investment advice is actually good for you or not. So everything starts with education, and that plays into your mindset. Like what's between your ears certainly helps with mindset. And of course, the more you educate yourself, the more you learn, the more confident you become, and the more likely you are to invest, the more likely you're going to pull the trigger and do your due diligence and find the right deals and make things happen. So everything starts with education and knowledge. Okay. So that's my first rule. Secondly, is you want to set investment goals. And we hear this time and time and time again, you know, to set goals. Well, it's important that you do set goals. And ideally, you should have written goals. And ideally, they should be very specific, clear, realistic, attainable, tangible goals. Okay. Because when you write those down and you review them on a regular basis, it triggers your subconscious mind to look out for things and do things that propel you down your real estate investing journey. If you don't have goals, you're kind of floundering aimlessly because you really don't know what you want, but you got to get clear on what you want. And the more specific you can be, the better. And then you turn those into actionable items, like baby steps to get and achieve that goal. If you're here and you want to get over there, what are the steps you need to take to actually get you there? And you know, the more clear and concrete you can make those steps, the more likely you are to do it and check that box or cross it out and get, you know, to where you want to be. But it's going to be difficult to get to a point where you are financially independent if you don't have clear, specific investment goals that essentially form a roadmap. You're doing yourself a disservice by not creating goals, because, you know, if you want to get to a place, you know, you pull out a map, you know, you pull up your Google Maps or your Apple Maps, put in the address and you have a destination, you know, all the turns to make. Well, same thing with investing. You got to know where to go, how to get there, what turns to make. So the third rule, by the way, you guys can interrupt me anytime.
I was just going to say, Charles, you got to stop telling everybody the playbook, because everybody has said goals, setting the goals, making them attainable, and then just proceeding with it. So I think Charles is sending everybody the playbook. That's just my opinion.
No, I'm really not. So yeah, Marco, yeah, what William is saying is, you know, the guests we've been interviewing so far, they've all been talking about, you know, having like clear and concise goals. And so this is just, you know, so he's wondering, and I'm wondering too, if you all communicated before.
No.
But, you know, in Marco's defense, if this was to go to court, William, Marco's 10 rules is already on his website.
That's true enough.
But yeah, Mark, I'm like, Mark, like selfishly, I'm like literally taking notes to be a better investor. So I'm super excited to hear the other ones too. But yes, we'll definitely interrupt you as needed. We definitely want to hear the rest.
Yeah, I don't even know how many years this has been up on our site. It maybe 10, 15 years. It's a sticky post. Like, it's the only post on our blog that is sticky, meaning it stays at the top. It's always at the top. It never, as we keep posting every day, it never goes down. It's always at the top. So, because it's important. But, you know, the third rule is to never speculate. In other words, don't be a gambler. You know, it pays to have a long-term perspective in mind, but speculating means that you're betting on, you know, the market appreciating, which, you know, a lot of people believe it'll continue to go up forever, and it doesn't. It goes through cycles and it can come down. But if you're investing only with, you know, capital appreciation in mind, you're being somewhat short-sighted, and you're also taking on a danger or some risks that you may not sustain a market downturn. And we saw this happen in 2006, 2007, when all these people thought they were investors and they were buying all this property, a lot of it being new construction. And then, you know, the credit market dried up, the housing market crashed, and all these people were stuck owning or holding these properties that they couldn't afford to keep. And why couldn't they afford to keep it? Because they were speculating on the market. They were hoping that prices would continue to go up. And at some point in time, they were going to sell the property and cash out with a big chunk of cash from the equity. But what they didn't realize is that the property didn't carry itself. You know, they were just gamblers. But if they would have, you know, invested with cash flow in mind, which is rule number four, they would have realized that the property would have been paying for itself all along, because that cash flow would cover the expenses and the debt service. And then what you have left over is your cash flow. And if that's the case, it doesn't matter what the market is doing. It could be going up or down. The price will change and go up or down, but who cares? The property's paying for itself over time. You'll still get all the tax benefits. You'll get the equity. You'll get the appreciation. You'll own that property. You'll generate cash flow, and, you know, you'll just benefit from it. But if you're a speculator, you're chasing after appreciation, that's not the prudent way to invest. But when you invest with cash flow in mind, but also, you know, realize that you're investing in good markets that have appreciation potential, you'll benefit on both ends of it, the cash flow and the equity gains from the appreciation. So, you know, I like to call cash flow glue. It's the glue that holds your real estate investment together. As long as you've got that cash flow going on, nothing unravels. You'll be able to weather through, you know, the storm. And on top of that, you need cash flow, because if you're going to have maintenance and repairs or capital expenditures that come along, how are you going to pay for it? You know, unless you have a big reserve account, you need to be able to cover future expenses like maintenance and repairs. So that's where, you know, the investing for cash flow comes in. So the fifth rule is to be market agnostic, which simply means that you're not married to any one market. And this is very important because, you know, the United States is made up of literally hundreds and hundreds of local real estate markets we call MSAs, metropolitan statistical areas. And each market operates independently of each other. They all have their own local economies. They move in their own cycles up and down independently of one another based on local factors. You know, there's still the macro, the big macro picture of, you know, what's going on in the general economy and with interest rates and whatnot, but they still operate independently. And so when you recognize this, you know, you can choose markets that offer the best stability and the best upside potential for your real estate investments. So it's important to understand that all markets are local. They all are separate from each other. You want to choose the market that offers the best stability and upside potential. And that comes down to, you know, like what I said before, job growth and population growth. Those are fundamental. And, you know, and then when you do it that way, you don't have to try and time a market. You can get into a market at any point in time and just know that that market has you know, growth potential and stability, and it'll just make your investing less stressful and more profitable. Any questions to this point?
I don't have any questions so far, but you're hitting the nail, like literally, like sometimes when I was going to ask you a question, like it's like you covered the next point where you talked about, you know, not chasing appreciation with cash flow. And so I think, you know, keep on going, man. I love it.
No, you're explaining it really, really well. So it's not leaving too much to the imagination, which is great.
Cool. Okay, cool. Well, that's good. So we already talked about the sixth rule. That's, you know, taking that top-down approach, you know, imagining like a funnel, start with the market, then focus on the sub-markets, neighborhoods, and then the property. So, you know, that's kind of the best approach, not doing it the other way around, because that's what a lot of investors do, is they sometimes start with, you know, the property or their own local market or a neighborhood nearby because they're familiar with it. Well, if you live in like Bay Area of California, it's extremely expensive and the numbers don't make sense. So why would you be looking at, you know, a very good neighborhood in the Bay Area or in San Francisco or San Jose when it's going to cost you over $1 million to buy a below average single family home as an investment property when you can't rent it out for high enough to cover your expenses and your debt service, unless you're putting a 50% down payment on it. And even then, it's not going to make much sense because your cash on cash return is going to be so low. Why bother? So, you know, this is why being market agnostic is so important. You know, choose good markets, not because you live there, but because the market makes a lot of sense.
Marco, do you invest mostly outside of the market where you live nowadays?
100%. Yeah, I live in Southern California, but I wouldn't invest in California at all. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. You know, the numbers don't make sense here. It's too expensive. Rents are too low. So it has a very low rent to price ratio. Tenant landlord laws are very skewed towards tenants. So if you get into, you know, if you get a problematic tenant, you know, you could be facing, you know, issues with trying to get them out. You know, they could take advantage of you and live rent free for months, fighting you for, you know, stupid things that you have to prove that you are in the right. So no, it doesn't make a lot of sense to invest in California. You know, unless you get a whopping deal and you don't need the cash flow, and you know, you're a bit of a speculator and you think that, you know, price is going to continue to appreciate, which it has been. And that's your, you know, that's your investment strategy, is not a cash flow focus. It's based on trying to maximize your appreciation gains. You know, you might be holding a property 2, 3, 4, 5 years and then, you know, selling it and doing a 1031 exchange into another market. You know, that can work. That works for people. But is it the best approach? Not necessarily. Is it the first approach you should take? Probably not, unless you're, you know, cash rich and, you know, it's not going to crush you if things go sideways or backwards. But no, I don't invest in California. There's too many challenges here, you know, high taxes, the regulation, red tape, all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean there isn't opportunity. It's just a different type of opportunity with a different type of approach.
Goes back to be market agnostic.
Yeah, exactly. So the seventh rule is to diversify across markets. This is, you know, you hear about diversification all the time. And, you know, in the stock market, you know, it might mean, you know, large cap, mid cap, small cap stocks or different industries, whatever. You know, diversification can be many different things. But diversification with real estate simply means that you're focused on one market at a time and you accumulate properties within that market. You know, you establish a footprint there. And that could be 3 to 5 properties. It just depends on, you know, what your overall goals are, how many units you want to acquire. It could be 3 to 5 properties, 3 to 5 units in that particular market. But once you have gotten a good foothold or footprint in that market, then you look at another market, ideally in another state, but another market that may be more of a growth market or maybe more of a cash flow market, but something to add and build onto your portfolio. And you acquire another 3 to 5 properties there. And then you do that again in a third market. So, you know, you can keep going on, but you don't necessarily need to do that. Typically speaking, for a lot of people, having 3 properties in 3 markets or 3 to 5 properties in 3 to 5 markets is a very successful portfolio, because ultimately the cash flows you're going to get from those properties will, you know, support your lifestyle. It'll make you a millionaire. It'll give you the equity you need and want for your net worth. But ultimately, that's going to be a very good portfolio with that geographic diversification. So I just call it 3 to 5 properties in 3 to 5 markets. Anyway, that's the 7th rule, is just diversification across different markets. The 8th rule is for most people. Some people love to be hands-on and manage their own properties, but for the most part, I think most people would benefit by using professional, full-service, local management. And that, I don't mean an individual like a real estate agent. I'm talking about like a management company. That way, your real estate investing is as passive as it can be. It's never 100% passive, but it's going to be as passive as possible. You know, property management can be difficult. It's a bit of a thankless job. Some people enjoy it. You know, if you enjoy it and you can do it long distance, great. A lot of people do. But for a lot of other people, it's better just to outsource it. Have someone who handles everything for you, from maintenance and repairs to leasing, turnover, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's just using management, local management with a professional management company.
I was going to say, I agree with you 100%. I think sometimes people feel like, you know, when they get their first property, they have to manage it themselves to learn. And William, you probably see this too, like, you know, with a lot of people you speak to, and like even some of our students in the coaching program, like they're like, I have to manage it myself to learn. And it's like, you really don't, you know, you don't have to manage it to learn it, right?
It's not it to me. I have the skill to do the handyman stuff myself. That is a skill that I have. It's still a waste of time for me to go do it, in my opinion. It's just not worth it. And then when I thought about doing my own property management, that's a headache. I don't even want to get involved. I want to own the property, and I'm more than happy to pay somebody to manage my property and to take care of whatever needs to happen as far as fixing a toilet at 2 a.m. or refrigerator's not working or something of that nature. It's just not what I would rather spend my time doing.
Yeah, I think most people are that way. But yeah, so I mean, it's a matter of choice. But if it's not something you should be spending your time on, then don't, right? So that, you know, the 9th rule is basically maintain control. Now, this is not necessarily for everybody, but maintaining control just means be a direct investor, own the properties yourself rather than through a partnership or a fund, like a syndication of some sort. But there are a lot of people out there who want to invest through a syndication, like a group investment. You know, they'd rather be a limited partner and be, you know, ultra passive and let other people do the work, and then they share, you know, share in the equity, share in the cash flow with, you know, the fund manager or their partners, whatever it may be. But generally speaking, if you can, it's always better to be a direct investor, maintain control, have property management, own the properties yourself. And then, you know, you're not really leaving it up to corporations or fund managers or other people or partners to, you know, look after your properties. Now, again, that doesn't mean that, you know, fund managers or partners or syndicators are bad. They're not. There's a lot of great ones out there. It really just depends on, you know, what your investment goals and strategy are. Because for some people, they're better off in a syndication. For other people, better to build your own portfolio of property. And then, you know, the 10th is not necessarily the last rule, but it's the last of the 10. And that is to leverage your investment capital. You know, that's one of the incredible things about real estate, is to be able to use other people's money and leverage your investment, your down payment, as much as 5 to 1. I love being able to put 20% down on a property, borrow the other 80%, and I maintain and keep 100% of the ownership and 100% of the profit and 100% of the upside potential and all the benefits, all the tax benefits. So you can't really do that with other asset classes. So real estate is really powerful because you can borrow against it and purchase income producing real estate with as little as 20% down. It's incredible. And that just magnifies your returns. It leverages your overall rate of return. It accelerates the wealth creation that you have because you can take your investment capital and stretch it out over multiple properties instead of just buying one property all cash. You're just buying five properties with 20% down. And so if you can do that, the speed at which you create wealth and cash flow is magnified, and it makes real estate very powerful that way. And it's hard to do that with other asset classes.
Man, I love those 10 rules that you share, Marco. And you've learned, like you said, you know, you've learned so much over the years. You've had failures and successes, and you know, to really like, you know, sum up those rules into those 10 rules, I think it's going to add like a lot of value to our audience if they haven't listened to it already. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it, but those rules are so key to make you successful and be a breakthrough investor, man. But Marco, I think, you know, a lot of us are really, really wanting to hear, where is the real estate market currently? And this is something that you're very great at explaining and summarizing, but can you give us like a general outview and outlook of the real estate market, where we are in the market cycle, and where do you see some opportunities for investors as well?
Well, yeah, that's a big question. There's probably three questions in there that could be unpacked. Well, housing in general, I'm bullish on. I always have been. And one of the main reasons for that is really just fundamental. The thing is we have a housing shortage in the U.S. We have had for a long time, you know, well over a decade. We need about somewhere between 1.5 million and 1.7 million new housing units every year to keep up with the growing demand. That's the organic growth. And we're only currently producing roughly about 1.2 million units, which is a large number, but it still falls short of what we need. So that means that we're running about a 500,000 housing unit deficit each year. And that just puts more and more pressure on the housing market in general. Like when I say housing market, I'm talking about, you know, just looking at the U.S. as a whole. Certainly some areas don't need much at all in terms of housing. Like for example, Detroit, there's a lot of distressed assets there. But, you know, you look at many other places like, you know, the South and Southeast, you know, the Sun Belt, Southern California, tremendous demand. And that's what's driving prices and keeping, you know, these housing markets growing and in some cases, uber expensive. But we have a shortage of housing and builders are not able to keep up with that demand. So, you know, that just means that, you know, if you own real estate, it's good for you. If you are thinking about investing in real estate, well, then, you know, jump on because, you know, you've got a lot of tailwind. You don't have much as far as headwinds right now. You know, there's a lot of opportunity. So because of that demand, I'm very bullish about, you know, the future of real estate. Again, it's all real estate is local. You have to choose your markets carefully. Be in the markets that have growth and the best upside potential. And, you know, at Norada Real Estate, you know, our company, when we're helping clients, we focus on 25 markets and we have inventory in all of those markets, not necessarily all the time, but we have all kinds of investment opportunities for investors, whether they're focused on cash flow, whether they're focused on, you know, appreciation potential, whatever it may be. Some of these markets are in Florida, you know, some of them are in the Midwest, some of them are in the Northeast, some of them have been in Texas, but although we're doing a lot less in Texas now. But for the most part, they're on the eastern half of the United States. But the fundamentals are strong, demand is strong, supply short. The problem isn't going away. It'll probably be a problem for, you know, at least the next 6 to 10 years. You know, we're just not going to catch up that fast. Now, builders are trying, but, you know, you can only grow so much so fast. And then, you know, sometimes you overbuild, like, you know, look at Austin right now. You know, sales have slowed down so much and builders were ramping up so much over the last several years that they pulled way more permits than they need in terms of building new product compared to the demand right there. So you will see a pullback cooling off in Austin. In fact, that market has already started to slow. It's on our radar as a slow market right now. So yeah, you know, I'm bullish on real estate. You know, as far as where to invest, I mean, you know, it comes back down to those fundamentals. You know, we have properties available to investors in places like Indianapolis, Kansas City, Missouri, the outskirts of Richmond, of Virginia, the outskirts, meaning the suburbs of Baltimore, some pocket markets within Pennsylvania. On and off, we've been in Atlanta, but it's hard to get inventory there. We're in about 5 or 6 markets in Florida, from Jacksonville down down diagonally through to the Fort Myers, Cape Coral area and up the coast towards Tampa. Those are all, you know, strong markets. Where else? On and off in Dallas, definitely Memphis, Tennessee. That's been a perennial market. We've been in Memphis for almost 20 years without interruption. You know, it's just a perennial market. And you know, there are others. I just off the top of my head, those were the ones that came to mind. So there's a lot of markets. But right now, as far as, you know, market conditions, roughly about a third of the markets in the U.S. are what I consider strong markets. They're strong growth. The market conditions are healthy. They're growing. There's new construction coming on board. There are retail sales. But unfortunately, that also includes, you know, Southern California, Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, even Riverside County. The problem is you can't invest in those markets. They're just too expensive. You know, the numbers don't pencil out, even though they're considered strong markets. About half the country, roughly 50% or so, are in a normal state right now in terms of market conditions, housing market conditions. So, you know, there's a balance between supply and demand and, you know, existing, you know, a normal trend for new home construction. So, you know, those markets are considered normal. About 10% of the country is slow right now. And a lot of times it's because of overprice and over construction. Salt Lake City, Denver, Austin, Texas, Philadelphia, and Baltimore to some degree, even Minneapolis, you know, those are some major markets that are considered slow. There's very little in the U.S. right now that would be considered very slow markets or very strong markets. It seems to be more of a true bell curve look at this point in time. Well, more like normal and strong is where we're at.
That's awesome.
Where do you see that going in the next, I don't know, 2 years?
The growth will continue. Appreciation rates will, in general, I'm talking generalities here because, again, it's market specific, but the growth will continue. Demand will continue to grow. Supply will slowly increase. Demand will stay there, but demand will continue to grow in the next 2 to 3 years compared to where we are now because mortgage rates will at some point start coming down. They can't stay up at the 8% level for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. Could they go higher? Sure. Really just depends on market conditions. But I don't think the Federal Reserve or the government wants to keep mortgage rates high because they don't want to crush a bunch of industries in the U.S. because that will just throw us into a terrible recession. They want, you know, a mild recession at worst, what they're calling a soft landing. So I think rates will come down over the next 12 to 24 months. Demand will start to increase again. We'll start to see more, you know, maybe more of a supply crunch depending on what builders are doing. But, you know, again, overall, I'm still bullish on real estate. It's definitely going to have sustained growth, especially in a lot of the markets I just mentioned. I don't know if that answers your question.
It just kind of getting your opinion of kind of what you think is going to happen in the next 12 to 24 months. You get a lot of mixed, kind of like a mixed bag when you ask that when a large group of people, but always interested to know what somebody who's been in the game for quite a little while to just get their opinion on it.
Short of something crazy going on, like a black swan event, you know, another COVID or, you know, September 11th type of scenario, you know, things are going to chug along. We'll have our mild recessions. They come and go. But as long as the economy as a whole is not impacted, it's contained within certain industries or sectors within the economy, you know, we'll chug along. We'll continue to move forward and grow, you know, at different rates of growth. But it's hard to see GDP going negative for too long because the economy is just robust enough that it should just keep chugging along.
That's awesome, man. And thank you for sharing those opportunities too, because I think a lot of listeners, when they hear you say that, you know, a lot of people may be wondering, you know, what markets should I start investing in? Or for those who invest already, or what are some of the markets that make sense for cash flow? And so I think that was super helpful, man. So, Marco, man, this has been absolutely amazing, man. And more than likely, we missed something. Is there anything we missed so our audience can become a breakthrough investor like you?
Well, we covered a lot. I, you know, you could always say you missed something because there's always something more to talk about. But, you know, I would just say, you know, kind of what we already talked about, like just continue educating yourself, like listen to podcasts like yours, listen to, you know, mine, the Passive Real Estate Investing Show. You know, education can be free. You don't even have to pay for it. There's a lot of great content out there that's at low cost or no cost. Books, you know, 10, 20 bucks. You know, it's not expensive to educate yourself. You know, if you're a beginning breakthrough investor, to use your terminology, you know, I created I think it's a 30-page primer, free download on our website. It's called The Ultimate Guide to passive real estate investing. It's been a perennial document. Like what I wrote 15 plus years ago is still true today in that document. I haven't really revised it at all. Now, I should go back and add to it and maybe make some revisions because a couple things have changed, but not dramatically. But, you know, it's a great primer. Even if you're a seasoned investor, it's a great primer in a lot of the things we've talked about today and some of the fundamental things to be considering or looking at. And so I titled it The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing. It's really the abbreviated version of the book that I haven't published yet, but I have the manuscript sitting right here. You know, it's really the primer to the book or the summary to the book, but a primer for anybody who's investing in real estate or wants to invest in real estate. But you just download it at noradarealestate.com.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for sharing that, man. Man, this has been fantastic. People are going to want to find you and listen to you more online, Marco. How can they find you and how can they connect with you?
Well, I have a lot of businesses and I'm tied to a lot of, you know, ventures from private equity to Broadway productions. And I put all of that on my personal website, which is marcosantarelli.com. Just my first and last name, marcosantarelli.com. And then also I'm going to be doubling down on what I post on Instagram. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's my name with my middle initial G. So Marco G Santarelli, just so at Marco G Santarelli is my Instagram. And I post every day, but I'll be putting a lot more video content here starting in a month from now.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much, Marco. It's been absolutely amazing having you on this show. Thank you so much for being one of our first guests. And we'll see you at RubeCon next year, man.
For sure. All right, Charles. Well, thank you. William, thank you. Appreciate your hospitality and good luck with the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Marco.